The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, we got every intentions of doing so, whether you're talking about those guys or anyone else. The bottom line is, when you're not operating the way that we are, nobody gets to do what it is they desire to do. I'd like to get George Pickens more touches, etc. But again, we need to look at all of those things, because again, we're not going to continue to go through the same process and hope for a different result.
That was Mike Tomlin on Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. Why no more? Why is Jaylen Warren not receiving more touches? Because that's a significant question, concern that I have. Because just when you look at the eye test, Jaylen Warren clearly has more bounce, more shake, more burst and speed than Najee Harris does. But at the same time, you might be wondering, you know, Najee, why is he even still out here? We know why the Steelers declined their fifth-year option. Why isn't it more Warren? Let me present this as a case for Najee Harris. This would be Najee's case. This is not my case. This would be Najee's case. And we can riff about it. Najee Harris reposted something, somebody's story, that said this on Instagram. Najee Harris is the first running back since 2008 to rush for 1,000 yards, over 1,000 yards, in his first four seasons. He's one of three players with 4,000-plus rushing yards and 1,100 receiving yards since 2021. And he's the only running back to rush for over 1,000-plus yards in each of the last four seasons. Pretty impressive. I mean, to be completely honest, it's pretty impressive. But when you think about those numbers and you wonder, so why is that? Well, Najee's dirt. He stays on the field. He doesn't get hurt. But what about Saquon Barkley? Yeah, he was hurt a couple of different times in New York. What about Christian McCaffrey? He's one of the best backs. He's been banged up this year and played in Carolina for a little bit of his career. Kind of hard to do. What about Josh Jacobs playing for the Raiders? What about Aaron Jones? He had a season where he was banged up in Green Bay. So one of Najee Harris's best traits, his durability and his dependability. He's a dependable back. Najee Harris this season, though, when you look at his yards per carry at 4, and his career average is under 4 at 3.9, it has to be concerning. His overall performances in games this year, I mean, the last couple, 70 yards against Kansas City, 74. Baltimore, he only ran for 42 on 9 carries. Philadelphia, he had 14 total yards on 6 carries. And I wonder if the fumble against Philadelphia is starting to move Najee Harris off the pedestal of a number one back in Mike Tomlin's mind, because it's become closer and closer to a 50-50 split with Jaylen Warren. And oh, would you look at that? Jaylen Warren, 11 rushes for 71 yards. He averaged 6.5 yards per carry. Najee had 13 carries for 74 yards and a long of 20. Jaylen Warren's long was 22. And when you watch the game and you think about just the efficiency of runs, when Jaylen Warren carries the football, the Steelers are a better team. He has quicker bursts through the hole. I worry about Najee Harris and his speed, because he is not the type of runner that is just a one-cut-go type of guy. He kind of bounces around the line, dances around the line of scrimmage, looking for room to go. He doesn't completely hit the hole like Jaylen Warren does. And in this type of offense, where the holes close quickly, and the offensive line does not hold blocks that well, and Dan Moore has been gotten gashed over the last couple of weeks, and Broderick Jones is still a better left tackle than he is at right tackle, even though some of those concerns I think have been mitigated at points of this season. But that offensive line has not played well. And there is no excuse that they have not played well. And I don't even think Isaac Samuolo has played well over the last couple of games as well. Jaylen Warren should be the number one running back on the Steelers, and it should be about a 60-40 split. What really bothers me, and it's something that we touched on with Kabali, and in 15 minutes, Nick Faribault of Penn Live will join us, is that especially when it seems like the Steelers are in a groove with Warren, you've seen it against good teams, you've seen it against bad teams where the Steelers are effectively running the ball. And they ran for 200 yards against Kansas City, partly because they couldn't throw it. A good Chiefs secondary, but also, well, when George Pickens isn't getting open and George Pickens isn't finishing on routes, you're not going to throw the ball much, and Russell Wilson struggled. Eddie Faulkner is who Mark Kabali says is the one that makes a determining factor on what running back is in the game at what point in time. And now Cordarrelle Patterson is only being in for a play or two, maybe three, in the backfield where he's getting carries. It should be none. It should be none on special teams. If you're going to use Cordarrelle Patterson, maybe use him as a wide receiver over anything at the moment. But Jaylen Warren should receive the brunt of the carries. Najee Harris, averaging 4 yards per carry in his career. 4 yards this year. 16 games and he goes over 1,000 yards. That's great. When I think of Jaylen Warren and the way that he runs the ball, he's averaging 4.5 yards per carry this year. He's a 5 yard per carry back, a full yard better than Najee Harris. Are the Steelers still concerned and worried about the fumble that Jaylen Warren had earlier this year? I mean, Najee fumbled and it seemed like they go back to Warren. Should they really lose trust in their backs that quickly? Based on those differences, Jaylen Warren and his performances, and again, limited opportunities. Baltimore, 12 for 48, 4 yards per carry. 9 for 47 in the Cleveland game, 5.5 yards per carry. Only had 3 carries in the previous game against Cincinnati. 4 yards per carry against Cleveland, 4.5 against Baltimore, 4.5 against Washington, 5 yards against the Giants. He didn't do well against the Jets, 3.5, 12 carries for 44 yards. 5 yards per carry against Denver. I think Jaylen Warren is the back that you want to utilize more so than Najee. And it brings up the question, do you use Najee in a potential role next year? And right now, I don't think I would. Now, Najee's had good performances against, you know, subpar teams. I'm on the fence because if you bring back Russell Wilson, you're going to have to pay him a significant amount of money. If you bring in a Sam Darnold, you're going to have to pay him a significant amount of money. You're talking $40 million a year. Plus, TJ Watt has only one more year after this year. Do you bring, well, you're going to bring him back, but what does the deal look like? Plus, do you pay George Pickens, and do you trade for a wide receiver, sign a wide receiver, or draft one? There's going to be significant financial capital spent at wide receiver at the end of the year as well. So I would bring back Jaylen Warren, and I would play him as the majority of the snaps. I would give him a ton of the snaps in this game against Cincinnati, and I would move forward with Jaylen Warren as one of my top backs, And when, as I was checking the snap counts in the last game, Jaylen Warren received, well, a decent amount, 53% of the snaps. Right above Najee at 45. 6 more snaps Warren took than Najee Harris. And it makes me wonder, are the Steelers even starting to believe that Jaylen Warren should be their number one back? He's good in passing plays. He's good in just speed option plays. And when the Steelers just want to go up tempo, Jaylen Warren is their back. But to me, it doesn't seem like Najee has the burst that he even had his rookie year, maybe even last year. And he's run very well at times this year. But as we get further and further into the season, I'm losing confidence in him. And I'm losing faith in him. Should I? At 412-928-9370. Fan weather is brought to you by Sun Chevy. 0% financing on 2024 Chevy EV models up to 60 months through January 3rd with credit through GM Financial. Tonight, cloudy with a chance of rain overnight and a low of 43 degrees. Tomorrow, it'll be Cloudy and cool with a high of 58 and a low of 45. It'll be a little bit warmer. George Pickens received 91% of the snaps for the Steelers against Kansas City. Is he a problem? Is George Pickens a problem for the Steelers? Because it seems like the offense is better with George Pickens in it. There's no doubt about it. But George Pickens, think about the instances that he's had this year. He's throwing his helmet. He gets basically de facto benched. They call it snap management earlier this year. There's rumors, I don't know how true they are or if they're true at all, about what time does George Pickens arrive for games. I mean, I'm not going to look into that too much. But I do feel like with George Pickens' attitude, giving up on routes, I would sign him. I'd be very hesitant to do so because unless you completely revitalize the wide receiver position like the Steelers did at quarterback, there's no weapons. There's no weapons on this team other than Pat Freiermuth and George Pickens. So if you want to chime in on that, 412-928-9370, of a few minutes before we get to Nick Faribault. Here's a text. I just think it's funny that everyone loves to ignore the fact that Harris runs against way more stacked boxes and in way more running situations that multiple teams have said they know when the run is coming. Imagine if he had a good line and a consistent passing game and you didn't run him just on first down and second down. Yeah, but at the same time, they do that, and thanks to the text to Aaron and Avella. The text line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Jaylen Warren has run on a lot of stack boxes as well. And maybe it's the up-tempo that could help Najee Harris too. But Warren, to me, just seems like he has the speed and the burst to just get the answers done, unlike Najee at times. I don't know. It seems like his yards per game, yards per rush, are what tells the story. Nick Faribault of Penn Live will join us next. We'll also get to your calls at 412-928-9370. Open Phone Friday will follow. Your thoughts at 5:30, and then we'll get to a hodgepodge. Here's Don with a headline, and we're back with Nick Faribault on the Fam. Fan Twitter is brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Steelers have lost three games in a row, and they're all the contenders. The teams that, at least three of them, that could go on to win the Super Bowl, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Kansas City, who's done it twice in a row. And if you throw Buffalo in there and you throw Detroit in there, I think we've covered them all. Cincinnati trying to knock down the door of being able to get in, but we'll see how much of a possibility that is come kickoff 1 o'clock next Sunday for the Steelers at Acrisure Stadium. Nick Faribault of Penn Live joins us now on the Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service. Nick is on video. There he is. What's up, my friend? Did you have a good Christmas?
I did have a good Christmas. It was a good time. Of course, spent at Acrisure Stadium, but yeah. good time over the last 3 to 4 days, Ben. I always like this time of year. It's a nice, cheerful time, family. It's stuff I like.
This is that lull in between Christmas and New Year's that's kind of like, all right, I mean, what are we doing? You know, like what's the main thing that we want to try to get set? You finish off the leftovers, all the Christmas cookies, and you just kind of roll. I kind of like this time, even though it's one of the oddest times of the year, I feel like.
The week between Christmas and New Year's is weird. It's even going to be weirder this year because, you know, I remember like last year, you know, Steelers had like a full week of practice here and they're going to be off the next few days. And so it's even weirder, you know, when you don't have that structure. But to me, during this time of year, it's a nice time to sit back a little bit, try and unwind and kind of take out the holiday exhaustion you might have, because even if you weren't working, family, everything, it can be a little exhausting.
All right, Nick, I'm exhausted of all the communication issues that the Steelers' defense seems to be having. The secondary, they're pointing fingers. Deshaun Elliott's dropping bleeps that we're not allowed to play. And it's concerning, man. This is week 17, and we're talking about a team that is not communicating well. Who do you think that the finger is being pointed at?
Yeah, I think they're pointing at a few guys. I don't think there's one mystery guy. I do think there's one guy that sticks out to me that's busted a few coverages the last 2 weeks. I think Cam Sutton would be that name that I would point to. There's a few plays where guys are just looking at him like, what are you doing? There are a few tackles that I think he should be involved in that he just stands and watches around on. So everyone else in that room, I feel like, has put in max effort. So even if you are – busting a coverage, at least you're trying, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick, whatever, he's busted a coverage or two, and he's definitely done that over the last 2 weeks. So he's another guy, I think, that, you know, probably has some scorn on him. He has tried. He's been physical. He's trying to make a play. Cam Sutton sometimes just stands around and watches guys. Minkah's third down stop on Xavier Worthy, he just points at him instead of going to help him. There was a quick slant to DeAndre Hopkins this week where Patrick Queen is fighting Hopkins on third and short, trying to stop him, and Sutton's right there. Doesn't even go over to help and gang tackle him. Just stuff like that that sticks out to me. Cam Sutton definitely is one of those players. I think Minkah has uncharacteristically blown a few coverages, trying to play some hero ball over the last few weeks. I think Patrick Queen has played some hero ball too. I didn't think it was as much an issue this week. I did think against the Ravens, though, Austin, that he really was a guy that over-pursued in rush lanes and was out of fit in the run game. I think they fixed the run game communication issues. I think that was the biggest thing against Baltimore, is the communication issues weren't just the pass game. It was the run fits. They weren't in the right spots. They fixed the run fits part of it, and then just busted a ton of coverages against the Chiefs. I think that's the issue, is, you know, it's 3, 4, 5 different guys that I can point to. Sure, there are guys that are doing it maybe more. You know, Cam Sutton's doing it more. Is Minkah busting more coverages than usual? Sure. But the fact that it is multiple guys, everybody's got to look a little bit around themselves and try and fix it. Even if there's angst at maybe 2 or 3 guys, there's multiple guys across that defense with that issue.
Yeah, Nick, because when I break down the film and I was looking at 2 plays in particular yesterday, it was the Isaiah Likely, because I wanted to see, like, how big of a pattern has this been? The Isaiah Likely touchdown, one of the first ones in the Baltimore game, that Minkah was just standing at the line of scrimmage, really caught me off guard because it seemed like he got flat-footed and caught in between and didn't go with Likely. Maybe he was going towards Derrick Henry. And the play that Minkah was trailing Xavier Worthy, who was in the backfield in the Kansas City game, and it seemed like Patrick Queen and DeShawn Elliott were trying to motion to him or communicate to shift that to that side. It just seems like Minkah and Cam Sutton, more so than anybody, are the ones that they're not getting the job done. And for Minkah, it's surprising to me because it seems like they ask him to play a role that maybe a lot of people don't agree with playing as a high safety. But, I mean, should I be concerned about the way Minkah's played the last couple weeks?
Yeah, I think it's been kind of uncharacteristic, as I mentioned. I just feel like he is doing things he doesn't usually do. He doesn't usually try and become Superman and make a play where he doesn't need to make a play. Unless he is super confident about something, either teams are baiting him into these wrong looks and playing on his tendencies, and he needs to go back in the mirror and kind of reevaluate what his tendencies are. I don't know if there's a tell on how Minkah plays the flat. I think the fact that both of his busts have been to the flat are significant. But even, you know, even if he does go with Likely, I mean, Derrick Henry doesn't even have anybody on him, really. Like, Patrick Queen is not getting over to either of those guys. He gets picked on that Likely touchdown. So that's, you know, even though that's on Minkah, PQ has to get over. And then you talk about the Worthy touchdown. That's just Minkah. His eyes caught in the backfield. He has to go with that guy. I really look at that and say, that's an uncharacteristic play for Minkah. You know, he usually is 2 steps ahead of the quarterback, right? He's a guy that takes away lanes. He's not a guy that's necessarily picked on and kind of exploited. And I think teams have kind of put a little bit of a mark on him and say, let's see if we can get him maybe playing out of position, playing a little hero ball. But those are really the only 2 coverages I think you can 100% put on him. Travis Kelce's touchdown, maybe you can. He kind of flies all the way over to the pylon. Cam Sutton looks suspect on that play, too. I don't know who's at fault for that
one. Kelce was running wide open for most of the game. I mean, in the middle of the field, there's like nobody 5, 10 yards away from him.
Right. I mean, listen, there are 4 busts that I counted just on Travis Kelce. I mean, I don't know how you leave Travis Kelce alone. I mean, like, listen, guys, it's not like they're leaving, you know, the no-name players alone. Like, Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely, and Xavier Worthy. I mean, all 4 of these guys are very, you know, high-name, known guys in the scouting report that you went over in the week.
3 out of 4tight ends, too.
It's just kind of crazy to me that we saw Travis Kelce, of all people, the one running wide open. So that's the thing to me, is the Steelers just can't communicate basically from a pre-snap thing. A post-snap perspective. They are talking at the snap. Like, you will see, Austin, go to the film, watch how many guys are just turning at each other at the snap and talking to one another and missing the play as it starts. You'll see it. It happens. Or how many guys after the play have their hands up looking at each other. Like, what just happened? There are so many miscommunications. I think that's the more concerning part about the two-game losing streak. I'm not going to include Philly. I think that one's a little bit of an outlier in this three-game stretch when we're talking about communication issues. But the last two games, they have self-inflicted about 80% of their issues off, yep, defensively. I think that is the issue. It's not like Lamar and Mahomes and Kelce and their cohorts beat them through exceptional playmaking because they are exceptional players. They were just guys running wide open, and that's a significant concern.
Joined by Nick Faribault, Penn Live. How concerned are you with Russell Wilson? Coming into this season, you know, Wilson and Denver had beaten Kansas City, had beaten Buffalo in back-to-back games, albeit there being a bye in between. But when I think about why Russell Wilson was brought here, it was to win these types of games, to beat Baltimore late in the season to clinch the division, to beat Kansas City to keep division hopes alive, to be able to maybe surprise against Philadelphia where he was undefeated playing against the Eagles coming into this. And for me, he's just fallen flat to the point where I'm questioning if he should come back next year in favor of maybe a Sam Darnold or someone else.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Russell Wilson has not been good the last 3 weeks. I think that's plain as clear as day. I think he's taking a ton of bad sacks. I think the offensive line has also regressed on top of that, which I think has hurt his sack stats even more. But the Steelers have their most sacks since, I believe, 2009. They've allowed their most sacks since 2009. If you remember that season, Ben Roethlisberger just got absolutely pummeled behind that offensive line that year. But here's the thing. They brought in two of the biggest sack takers in the NFL. This was their resume. We knew Russell Wilson took bad sacks. We knew Justin Fields took bad sacks. That is what has been done all year. I think the issue is we're kind of back to stage one where you were before the season, which was Russ is starting to miss guys. Like, there are guys running open. Pat Freiermuth missed open for a touchdown on one huge play in the red zone. They had to settle for a field goal instead. The INT, he just telegraphs it. You know, even if you look at George Pickens' route on that play, the safety's never concerned with George Pickens. I don't even think he would have ever looked George Pickens' way, even if George Pickens had run the go route.
Justin Reed even tweeted that.
Has to make a different decision.
He even tweeted that, man, he wasn't concerned.
Russ just has to make a better decision on that play. And George, you know, yes, run the right route and run the go route. But, I mean, Russ steps back two steps and just fires it up the seam and doesn't even look at the safety. I mean, just doesn't make any sense from that regard. And then the pick against Baltimore, really bad stuff. I think the fact that he's turning the ball over, right, two fumbles in the last 2 weeks, two INTs in the red zone, is also compounding the fact that he's taking bad sacks, he's missing guys open, and he's holding onto the ball too long. So he's just missing guys in structure. And so he's been a significant issue on top of offensive line regression. And when the O-line has regressed on top of that, what you really get is a mess of a passing game. They don't have the wide receivers to overcome that. And on top of that, I just think you are seeing somewhat of a talent issue on the offensive side come to roost. I think we kind of knew that. But yeah, I mean, listen, Russ has to play better. I think the organization views him in very high regard, and I certainly would bet that he is back next year.
Would you bring him back
now? But yeah, I do. I do. And so, you know, we'll see how that kind of, I guess, manifests over the last two, three games, depending on how many they play. But I would say Russ is going to be back next year. I'm not sure I would be convinced right now. I'm kind of with you, Austin, that I'm not sure that he should be back next year. But then you also look around the league and say, what are the options? And I'm going to be real with you, Austin. Would I rather have Russ at 25 or Sam Darnold at 50? I mean, I think I'd take Russ.
But is this a similar conversation as to, well, you can move off of Mike Tomlin? And I'm not saying to fire Mike Tomlin right now, but it's the whole, well, what are you going to get to replace him type of argument? You know, like, you can't be scared of what could be, you know, on the other side of the door.
I just don't. If you fire Tomlin, you have the whole cachet of coaches to pick from, right? There's a lot of actually intriguing names you could pick from. I don't see intriguing names for quarterbacks. Like, I just don't think there's the upside swing that you speak of. Like, okay, if I fire Mike Tomlin, I can hire Ben Johnson. I can hire anyone I want, really, right? And so there's an upside to that. You get a full market. With quarterbacks this year, I mean, It's just not good. I mean, Kirk Cousins coming off his season, yuck. Darnold at 50, I'm out on that personally. I like Darnold, but I don't think he's that good. Justin Fields, maybe you bring him back on a cheaper deal. That could be your upside's play. But the quarterback class this year is brutal from a rookie perspective. There's just not a lot to go from. They're kind of stuck here, Austin. The fact that they are going to pick, you know, in the 20s, they're not going to get one of Shador or Cam Ward. Maybe they could take – maybe if you like Jalen Milrow, I guess that's the kind of argument.
No,
if you like a Jalen Milrow.
Not at all.
That would be the swing. But it's just a really bad quarterback market this year. And so you look at Russ, and there's just not a lot of alternatives to him. Maybe you want Justin Fields back instead of Russ. That can be an argument. If someone comes available via trade, maybe a Geno Smith, then we can talk. But it's just not a very good quarterback market.
Last one for you quickly here, you know, Nick. Everybody is just easily blames the coach. It's just very easy to blame Mike Tomlin, who does deserve a good bit of blame for this. But how much blame should Tomlin receive for this? If you want to call it a collapse, I will. If not, you can call it a mini landslide for this disaster.
I mean, he deserves blame. I mean, there's no question about it. This is a pattern, Austin. I think that's the thing. It's not a one-off, right? It's not like 2024 is the first time we've seen this story. We've seen them go on losing streaks like this in every single year since 2017. They are one of the only teams in the NFL that has done that over that span. Some of it hasn't been December. Some of it's been earlier in the season, like last year where they went on a slide. But there has been a patch like this every single year where they have gone through it. And that is concerning. I mean, the Steelers, I don't think, are a Super Bowl roster, period. So I'm not sure, you know, if collapse is the right word. I think they're coming back down to earth a little bit in some ways. But as a coach, you are there to maximize talent. You can't tell me you watch this team on Sundays or whatever, Wednesdays, Saturdays, and that this team is maximizing its talent. It's just not, right? The way they use George Pickens, the way they use Pat Freiermuth, the way that that defense is called, I think also doesn't maximize some talent. They have issues, wide receiver. I think the offensive tackles are definitely issues right now. I think corner is an absolute black hole on this roster. But I do think that what we are seeing is coaching at some point, right? The miscommunication, when you cannot get communication down in week 16, week 17, it does go to communication. At some point, preparation throughout the week has to get through to the players, and it doesn't seem like there's a great level of understanding of the game plan, great understanding of the coverages, of how to play certain situations. That's a coaching issue. And on offense, I've had plenty to worry about with Arthur Smith and how he's used some of these players. I think they're just finally getting around to the Jaylen Warren train. They should have been using him in a certain way all year. And so, yes, I think coaching is a big-time issue. I think Mike Tomlin deserves blame for it because it's a pattern. Listen, this is the reason they haven't won a playoff game in so long.
Nick Faribault, Penn Live. Really appreciate it, man. Talk soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Austin, as always.
Just a lot of concerns with this team in terms of the defense now. Popping up to be one of the main ones. It was supposed to be the main strength. It's the highest paid defense in football. You're paying them $130 million collectively for this defense to basically get run over by Kansas City and run by from Baltimore, where Baltimore just crushed them in the running game. $130 million, one of the lowest paid offenses, highest paid defenses. Maybe the Steelers need to take a good look in the mirror. Open Phone Friday is next. Your thoughts, Steelers, Pitt, whatever you want to talk about in the sports world, fire them in. 412-928-9370. We are approaching the 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Dom has a headline. We're back for Open Phone Friday. Austin Bechtel filling in for Andrew Filippone and Chris Muller on the Fan. Really sad news as longtime sportscaster Greg Gumbel, as Dom said, has passed away at the age of 78. He was the host of March Madness on CBS. And just the when you think of March Madness, I think of Greg Gumbel and the selection show and announcing all the teams. When you heard Greg Gumbel announce your team, just the jubilation that came with it, did a really good job with the NFL as well. just can recall some of the calls that Gumbel made of Steeler games, Antonio Brown touchdowns. Really sad, Dom. Greg Gumbel, 78 years old, was battling cancer, knew that he was going through it, and was on the fight to try to beat cancer. Really sad to see him gone at the age of 78.
Yeah, I mean, it just sucks. And like you said, I mean, he is the voice of Selection Sunday, which is one of the biggest years on the sports calendar, and nothing happens on the field. And he did it forever. So it just, you know, really sad and sucks.
It's one of my favorite days of the sports calendar. All year, it's Selection Sunday. And it's really sad because I can hear Greg Gumbel's voice at, like, introing the Selection Sunday show, like, right now. And it's really sad. But it's your turn, your time on Open Phone Friday. Here's Paul. He's on I-70. What's up, Paul?
What's going on, City Limits?
I'm great, Paul. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Now, you heard the rest. Now you're going to hear the best.
There we go, Paul. You always bring it.
The problem is Mike Tomlin can't evaluate talent, okay? Mike Tomlin gives you word salads every week. He never has his teams ready, and he has the wrong guys on the field. Najee Harris is a bust. I've been saying this for how many years now? Jaylen Warren is the better back. Joey Porter is working on being a bust. Why Cam Sutton is even on the team is beyond me. And, you know, there is some truth to Minka Fitzpatrick. I mean, it seems like every time there's a blown coverage and he's somewhere in the vicinity looking at somebody else. But I don't know. I think until you get rid of Mike Tomlin, you're not getting anywhere close to a Super Bowl. And it kills me to say that because I'm a 70s Steelers kid. So
Paul, you think they don't evaluate talent. Let me ask you, like, Cam Hayward, the T.J. Watts of the world, their offensive line, I think, has a couple of pieces, Pat Freiermuth.
Well, let's look at the draft, City Limits. Let's look at the bust he's had in the last 10 years. You got more bust than you have players. Cam Hayward's been on this team for 15 years.
Do you put this on Tomlin? Do you put it on Tomlin, or do you put it on Kevin Colbert in his draft?
I got to put it on. I got to put it where the blame needs to be, on Junior. Junior lets his worldview run his football team. And they didn't have no problem telling Chuck Noll the game had passed him by, and he won 4 Super Bowls. Mike Tomlin, I don't know. I don't know what he's talking about week to week. I really don't, Cindy Limits.
Paul, I appreciate it as always. You have a good one.
All right, buddy.
There are some drafts that Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert, because I think it's probably like 70-30, maybe closer to 60-40 input that it was Colbert and then Tomlin. Tomlin had a lot of impact on the draft. There's no doubt about that. I mean, think about the 2022 Steelers draft, and he makes some good points. Kenny Pickett was your first-round pick. George Pickens was your second-round pick. DeMarvin Leal was your third-round pick. Not good. Calvin Austin was your fourth-rounder. Connor Hayward, your sixth-round pick. And then Mark Robinson, a special teams player, maybe he'll make a couple impactful tackles here. 2021, though, Najee and Pat Freiermuth, pretty good. Dan Moore, I mean, you might not like Dan Moore, but he started at left tackle over the past 4 years. Kendrick Green, bust, terrible pick. You go back to the 2020 draft, the team that went 12-4. Chase Claypool in the second round because they traded their pick for Minka. Alex Highsmith was in that draft. Bad Anthony McFarland was in that draft. He was just not any good. They also picked Carlos Davis and Antoine Brooks. Antoine Brooks, a Maryland guy who Mike Tomlin loves picking guys from Maryland, and Kevin Dodson, who ended up thriving with the Rams after being pretty bad here. And then the year before that, if you just want to go back to a 5-year sample, Devin Bush, Deontay Johnson, Justin Lane, Benny Snell, guys that are out of the league. Deontay, who will probably be out of the league soon, and Devin Bush, who has not been very good. Here is Jay in Warrendale. What's up, Jay?
Yeah, hey there. Yeah, Paul stole a lot of my thunder there. But I think it boils down to that the Steelers are getting beat by better teams with better coaches. That's it.
So what do you think is the remedy to be able to get past that? Because Tomlin's been around for how many years? 17 years. They're always seen as the glorious Pittsburgh Steelers that should be able to win these big games and compete for playoff games, which they haven't won in 7 years. What's the difference then?
Better teams with better coaching. overall.
So you would fire Tomlin?
Yes.
Would you?
Now, pardon?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, now, before you hit me with, he's never had a losing season.
I don't really care about that. I really don't.
I don't either. But see, to me, that's like saying you kissed your sister.
I feel like the whole Mike Tomlin thing about he's never had a losing season, yes, it's monumental that he's never had a losing season. But it has never been a losing season for the Steelers turned into their, like, the ultimatum. Like, I heard somebody nationally say this. Has the Steelers, their ceiling and their floor, become not having a losing season? Like, that's basically become their floor. Like, they don't lose. They don't have losing seasons in 17 years. That doesn't happen. Going back to Bill Cowher, it doesn't happen. Has that become the ceiling too?
This is just getting, I mean, ridiculous at this point. I mean, what are we doing?
What's ridiculous, Dom?
It's not always Mike Tomlin's fault. Stop.
So who are you blaming? Russell Wilson?
I think
George Pickens?
Yeah, both. Blame the defense.
Minkah Fitzpatrick?
Yes, everybody. It's not
everybody
just Mike
but Tomlin, Dom. Everybody but Tomlin.
No, you can blame him for certain things.
What should
yes.
he be blamed for?
Some of the decisions that he made. I agree with you, the punt wasn't great.
Any of the punts where they waved the white flag and basically conceded in the fourth quarter.
Okay, but the fact that people are calling in and saying he should be fired, like, what are we doing? Come on,
well, it's
stop.
Always number one to blame the coach. Well, Jason in PA want Mike Tomlin to be fired. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how are you doing, sir?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. I got to agree with it. Like, everybody's getting on Mike Tomlin. In the beginning of the year, when the schedule came out, you knew I'm not a Steelers fan, to be honest with you, but I'm a sports fan. Everybody knew that the schedule was brutal the second half. You know, the NFL didn't do them any favors when you're playing Philadelphia, Baltimore, and Kansas City in 11 days. It's just, you can't blame this all on Tomlin. I blame it on some on him, but a lot of it on the general manager and the owner, because you're playing with the cards you're dealt with, and the drafts just haven't been that good.
But if, Jason, at the same time, if you are comparing yourself to Baltimore, who the Steelers have won 8 of the last 10 against, and Kansas City, and maybe it's unfair to compare them to Kansas City, but both teams went 3-0 in this same stretch. So it's not like it was impossible to win at least one out of the three games in 11 days.
No, but see, I don't compare themselves to Baltimore. They do not have the talent that Baltimore has. We knew that going in. You can try to put that there, but they just simply don't. They're playing with what they have. You can't compare them to Baltimore.
Thanks, Jason. Why can't you compare them to Baltimore? Why can't you compare them to Baltimore? They've beaten Baltimore 8 of the last 10 games. They've played. They're in your division. You've been better than them head-to-head on a consistent basis for the last 5 years. Why can't you compare them to Baltimore? Why? Because of playoff wins? Because the roster? I mean, look at the Steeler roster. Minkah's an all-pro. Cam Hayward's a Hall of Famer. TJ Watt's the defensive player of the year for the second time. I mean, Russell Wilson's a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's not at the same level that he once was before. But no, I mean, Kansas City, I get it, because they have Mahomes, and anybody with Mahomes, they can be in a class of their own. But no, I mean, this team should definitely be compared to Baltimore. There's no doubt about it. Here's Mr. Old School. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, City Limits? Hey, here's what I got to say, man. At the end of the day, right, Tomlin is not the one to drop the interception right in Pat Queen's hands.
Yes.
He's not the one that threw the pick six, or that was should have never been thrown. That pass to Freiermuth should have never been thrown. Russ wanted to win bad, wanted to get Freiermuth some touches. And where I fault Tomlin is that he's been running that defensive scheme, and those slants across the middle and tight ends being open, we've had to deal with that for the last 7 or 8 years. His defensive scheme, he's not transitioning with the times. Terrell Austin should have been fired. We should have kept Flores last year and made him a defensive coordinator for what he's doing in Minnesota. And the other thing is, they should have did everything they could to bring back the offensive line coach that went to Denver, Mike Munchak. They should have done everything they could to bring him back, because our O-line is getting obliterated. Every week they're getting pushed into the backfield. Russ is only 5'10". It's hard to see over these. I've never seen so many batted balls in the last 3 weeks with Russ. They're getting pushed in the backfield. He doesn't have the speed to roll out that quickly anymore. and it's just a recipe of disaster. The O-line coach needs to go. Munchak needs to be brought back, and we need a defensive coordinator who runs a different scheme than what has been going now with the de facto Tomlin-Austin pairing on the defensive.
Thanks, Mr. Old School. Here's a text. You can't compare them to Lamar, Derrick Henry, Zay Flowers, and Mark Andrews. Okay. Does anybody have T.J. Watt on that side of the ball for Baltimore? Do they have a T.J. Watt? No. Do they have a Cam Hayward on the defensive line? I don't think so. Look, I'm not comparing apples to apples here with Russell Wilson versus Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry versus Najee Harris, Jalen Warren. But when you look at the overall constructions of the teams, and again, that history of how they've dominated Baltimore over the years, that matters. Like, they've had their number. And was that broken in Baltimore? Very possible. Like, are the Ravens going to go on a huge streak? I don't think we should lower our expectations. Shouldn't we raise them? I mean, we always get so mad at the Steelers for when they lose to awful teams. Like, they lost to Dallas earlier this year. They lost to Indy. They're not very good. Shouldn't we look at the games that they play against Baltimore and Kansas City as trying to be on their level? Like, we get so mad at the Steelers when they lose games to teams that are not on their level, that are just bad teams. Shouldn't we try to raise the Steelers' expectations a little bit so that it's not, you know, only winning a playoff game is the expectation? I mean, we're comparing T.J. Watt, where, I mean, Baltimore doesn't have anybody capable of being a T.J. Watt on their type of defense. Here is Mike in Pittsburgh. What's going on, Mike?
I can't even believe someone say that about Baltimore.
Yeah, I don't know.
That don't even make sense. And quit blaming Tomlin, man. It's not Tomlin's fault. Like you said, they dropped them. They had so many opportunities against good teams. You have to take advantage of it. They had a fumble on the ground. They didn't go after it. They didn't get it. They had an easy pick by any person should have caught that ball. My wife would have caught that ball. It was that easy of a pick. I mean, it was up in the air for 10 minutes.
Thanks, Mike.
You got to make those plays. You make those plays, and it's a whole different game.
And it's a whole different game, and I appreciate the call. And, I mean, those type of plays, the execution from the players just has to be better. It hasn't been there. This is not, Dom, this was not supposed to be a defend Mike Tomlin segment. Like, why? How did it become that? Mike Tomlin deserves some blame. He deserves a lot of blame, but he shouldn't deserve every single ounce of it. He's not out there throwing picks, fumbling at the goal line, not making tackles, not communicating on defense. I mean, there are multiple different avenues of blame that should be thrown around here. Whew. The Hodgepodge is next. Austin Bechtel with you, filling in for the PM team. It's been an honor to fill in for Pony and Mueller. Final few minutes of the show is up next. Might be able to squeeze in another call as well here on the FM. All right, it's time for the Hodgepodge of Nothingness.
This is a Hodgepodge of Nothingness.
First up, Dom, I sent you this last night. I saw a story on the Wall Street Journal saying what your face age can tell doctors about your health. So a lot of people like to say about us that we look a lot like younger, especially like without facial hair or anything like that, that we portray to be like Starkey. So when he first met me, thought I was like 17 or 18 years old. Do you think that you can tell about somebody's age, what your face age can tell doctors about your health? How old do you think that you look?
Well, that's a great question. 19, 20. That's usually what I get. And I'm 21, so I think it's pretty good. It's pretty
I think
accurate.
You look like you're about 18.
Really?
18, 19, yes.
I mean, I'd probably guess that you're 19.
Especially without the facial hair.
Correct.
Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think that we look as young as we kind of do?
Because we're two strapping young men.
How old do you think Pony looks?
35. Actually, he also looks pretty young.
Yeah, he does.
And 35.
I think everybody here honestly looks pretty young. Doran still looks like he's like 27 and can run anybody over on the field right now.
Yeah, I'd probably guess Doran was 30, maybe like 28, 29.
If Joe was wearing glasses and a hoodie with his hood up and was crouched around the mic, how old do you think he would look?
55?
Yeah.
What would you say?
I would say younger than that, too.
Okay, yeah.
Do you know how old Joe is?
Isn't he around 55? He's 56,
yeah, he's right. He's no, but I'm sure he'd be happy that you said he was 56.
How old is he?
He's right in that area.
Okay, I think he's actually 56.
He's not 56, but I'm not going to give out his... You know Ron Cook never wanted to give away his birthday?
Why?
He didn't want... So we have a thing out here that says everybody's birthday during the month. Like, and you know, maybe you walk by and you can say happy birthday to whoever. Ron never let his birthday be put up there. He never let anybody know his birthday and let it be like known as like a public thing. Did Ron not want anybody to wish him a happy birthday? Like, why would he not want that?
Yeah, I mean, that I could see that. I think now that he's not here, we should proudly put it up.
Yeah, should we?
Yeah, I do.
And what good would that do?
I don't know. Kind of like stick it to Ron, like, haha, you want your birthday up? Well, now it's up.
Did you ever hear about the beef that Crowley, well, not Crowley, but mainly Callis had with Ron over the lookalike at the Pirate game?
Yeah, and so Callis should be the one that puts his birth. In fact, Callis should tweet out every year on Ron's birthday.
Happy birthday, Ron?
Yeah.
Don't you think that would make Ron even madder?
Yeah, but like, why does Callis care?
I feel like Callis wants to be, you know, a friend of Ron.
I don't think Callis cares.
Do you have anything for the hodgepodge?
Yeah, I got something.
This is a hodgepodge of nothingness.
Hit it.
All right, so I saw this yesterday because the New York Post picked this up and a couple other outlets. So there's a TikTok going around Austin.
Okay.
Where there is a girl who is talking about this viral trend for single people, and it is a way for single people to find love in the new year.
You're insinuating that you want to go out on the town with this fellow.
No, hold on. It's way better than that. So the trend is that on New Year's, you eat 12 grapes, and it's supposed to give you luck in the new year for finding a significant other. Now, it goes back to like a centuries-old tradition that each grape represents a month, whatever. So, since I know the two of us are single, I made a little shopping trip before
bought grapes?
And I have 12 grapes. One for me, for you. So I'm going to walk in. I'm going to give you your cup of grapes.
Okay, and there are 12 in there?
12. Well, I had Seth count them before the break, so as long as he can count.
The dedication.
There are 12 grapes in this cup, and if you eat them before the end of the night,
yeah,
then you're going to find a girlfriend in the next year.
How about that?
So I'm going to walk in and give you them right now, because I'm a good friend.
I had one more that I'm going to hit on. If you want to quickly hit it.
This is a hodgepodge of nothing.
Bryce Young was talking about on what gifts he wanted for Christmas as a kid. And one of the main one was Nike Elite socks, saying that was fashion back then. Dom, were you too young for Nike Elite socks? Because I still have them. I still wear Nike Elite socks.
I wear Nike socks. I don't know what kind I wear them.
Do you know what Nike Elite socks are?
I guess not. If I don't know.
Look at this picture of this sock. Have you ever seen that type of sock?
Oh yeah.
Those are Nike Elite socks. Yeah, I have like 7 pairs of them.
Yeah, I wore those years ago.
All
not
different
now.
Colors. I used to wear them to basketball all the time.
I'm more of a low-cut sock guy now, you know, where they're barely showing above the shoe.
I had my first grape.
How is it?
Good. I've eaten grapes before.
Now you have 11 more, and then you're going to find love in the new year. Just watch.
Well, I hope the same works for you as well.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks to Bryant McFadden, Mark Cabali, and Nick Faribault for joining us. Dom, great working with you for the first time. How about that? First time we've had the opportunity. Hopefully, there'll be more in the future. Thanks to Pony and Muller for letting me be able to steer their ship today as well. Wish everybody a Merry Christmas belated and a Happy New Year as well. I'll be back tomorrow, 9 to 12:30 on the air, and Sunday, 5 to 7:30 p.m. Team, signing off.